Now, one of the most popular series streaming on streaming service Hulu in the last year has been the Michael Keaton drama called Dope Sick. Not sure if you've caught that. The series focuses on the epicentre of America's struggle with opioid addiction, specifically the painkiller OxyContin.
We have created
the greatest painkiller.
This works better than anything I've ever used before.
There is something unique about OxyContin.
There's already the spike in overdoses and crime rates.
If you leave me the miracle drug you're selling, it might be a little more addictive than you said it was.
No drug is going to work perfectly for every patient. That's not our job. Our job is to sell.
People's lives are at stake, and a pharma company is lying.
I want Purdue to feel some pain.
Don't worry. It's an excellent drug.
Now, prescription drug addiction is a growing problem worldwide and the fastest growing drug problem in the USA. Now, the South African Society of Psychiatrists says it's also a trend in this country. It says that 7% of rehab admissions are for addiction to prescription drugs. Joining me on the line now is pain management expert and a member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, Dr. Shakir Solduka. Very good morning to you. Great to have you with us. There's a misconception, isn't there, Shakir, that when we talk about opioids, we're immediately talking about heroin and then the image of what a heroin addict looks like and how they behave. But the truth is that prescription meds, prescription painkillers can be as lethal as street drugs, can't they?
Hi, good morning. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one correction is that people don't associate opioids, opiates with heroin. And that's the point.
Right.
I mean, heroin is an opioid. So yeah, whether you're on OxyContin or fentanyl, which is an anesthetic drug, which is a Michael Jackson one, or morphine or codeine, it's basically the same as heroin.
Yeah.
That's really the point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Listen, my own experience in terms of addiction, I don't even know if one would call it a gateway drug, I hate that term, but started off, had a terrible toothache, was given a couple of codeine, and, you know, six or seven years after that, I was checking myself into rehab for a codeine addiction. And it's real. And a lot of the people that I was in treatment with were also where they ended up. And ultimately, when you're talking addiction, there's not really a great deal of difference between a heroin user and a codeine user. If the unmanageability of life, if the consequences of that addiction can take you to the same place, perhaps it's how we view society views those two things very differently, in the same way, you know, that a street junkie, as you might think about, might look very different to, you know, Mrs. Jones in Constantia, who's necking back 20 or 30 codeine a day.
Absolutely. And I think it's a spectrum issue. So you have codeine on one end of the spectrum and heroin on the other, but it's the same thing. It attaches to the same receptors in the brain. It has a similar effect, albeit at a slightly lower level. You know, people take painkillers, well, they start off taking painkillers, as you did, for a legitimate issue like a toothache or some kind of pain. But the pain-killing effect is just one aspect of it. The sense of well-being, the sense of a relief of anxiety, an uplifting of the mood, an improved sleep at night, are all the other hidden factors that step into to the picture. And then instead of using it for pain, you start using it for all these other things as time goes on, not unknowingly, you know. So it's partly a problem on the part of the patient and the general population in terms of knowledge. Mm. But I must add that it's a problem on the part of the medical fraternity, because, to be very honest, a large portion of the medical fraternity don't get the dangers that we've been talking about now conceptually, and don't understand that by continually giving patients what they want, they're creating a problem.
Sure.
Which is on the heroin codeine spectrum.
That is so interesting to me. I want to stick a pin in that. We'll return to that in just a second. Shakir, will you just talk to us? You touched on it a little bit there. Talk to us about what's happening in the brain. What's happening when we take, let's say, for example, a cocodamol or a codeine tablet? What is it? What's the addictive thing? What's going on in the brain? You talked about pain receptors, but what happens? How does it become? How is it addictive? How do we become addicted physically?
Sure. So codeine and morphine, pethidine, heroin, and all of these drugs are a group of drugs called opiates, and they attach to receptors called opioid receptors in the brain, which are situated very diffusely in, you know, various areas of the brain. Now, we have an endogenous opiate. The human body produces the most potent opiate known to man called endorphins, which is about 30 times stronger than morphine.
Sure.
So the problem is when we take these exogenous opiates, when we take painkillers, we suppress the production of endorphins, and endorphins are what determine our pain threshold. So if you have enough endorphins, if you exercise, if you live a normal life, your endorphin production is pretty good, your pain threshold is normal, so you don't feel day-to-day activities because there's enough endorphin washing over your brain, attaching to the receptors, and allowing your day-to-day activities not to be painful. But when you take exogenous opiates, you don't produce enough endorphins, your pain threshold drops, and as a result, everything becomes painful. Even the most simple things, you know, it's just generalized pain. So that's the one issue. The receptors are widely distributed in the brain. When it comes to addiction, one must understand that endorphins, because they give you the same sense of well-being as, say, morphine, can be quite addictive or have habit forming. So if people exercise, for example, they become addicted to exercise because of the endorphin rush. Now, that sense of well-being increases a chemical called dopamine in our brain. Dopamine is the happy chemical in moderate amounts. In very high amounts, it's very toxic. So it's all about scale. So if you produce a medium to small amount of dopamine, it's healthy. If you produce too much of dopamine, it can make you psychotic and hallucinate and, you know, become paranoid and so on. So these drugs increase endorphins, but then, I mean, increase dopamine indirectly via the opiate receptors, and that's where the addictive component comes into it. Any addiction, whether it's to a drug or to gambling or to any substance that can become habit-forming, works via a part in the brain called the ventral tegmental nucleus, or the nucleus accumbens. When that gets lit up, you are basically addicted. And once that gets lit up, it can take anything from one to a number of years to stop being lit up. Even if you stopped using the substance, that area of your brain is still active and takes a long time to be not active anymore.
Yeah.
So that's why they say even when you dry and clean for a long time, you're still potentially addicted.
Absolutely.
So that's the mechanism. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Shakir Salduka, who's a pain expert management and also a member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists. We're talking about painkiller addiction, prescription drug addiction. We often think of opioid addicts or the opioid crisis as being the heroin crisis, the street drug crisis. But actually, the crisis is a lot closer to home for a lot more of us, which is that these are drugs that are being supplied by our doctors. That we getting prescriptions for things like perhaps a bad back, or in my case, it was a toothache, things that you might take post-surgery. You mentioned there, Shakir, that the medical fraternity must take some responsibility in terms of how freely they're giving out these drugs. Why is there this disconnect? How is it possible? It seems extraordinary to me as somebody 15 years now in recovery who looks at the crisis that we're facing and sees it so clearly, that there is such a disconnect between medical professionals, and then looking at people who are so highly represented in treatment centres for the very things that the medical professionals are giving them.
Yeah, I think it arises out of the fact that you'll be amazed to know that a lot of doctors don't realise that codeine is an opiate.
Sure.
A lot of doctors don't realize that drugs like Tramacet and Tramadol and even Miprodol, which is so easily available over the counter, Adcodol, which is available without prescription, are actually opiates.
Yeah.
Or they have opiates. That's the one issue. The second issue is that pain is the most common thing that people present to doctors with. And people in pain, and you must understand, as I said earlier, if you've been taking a lot of painkillers, your endorphin levels drop, so that you're in pain because you're taking the painkillers. So they're in the cycle of pain. The more painkillers you take, the more pain you will have, because your endorphins are low.
Yeah.
So as a result, they keep going to the doctors. And remember, the instinct of a doctor is to heal, is to help, is to do something. So I often do talks with doctors. And one of the questions I ask them before the talk starts is, what's the hardest thing for a doctor to do? What's the most difficult thing for a doctor to do? And the answer is nothing. Hmm. It's very difficult for a doctor to do nothing. So as a result, when a patient presents to them with a pain, they have to give them something that works and makes them feel good. And if that doesn't work, they have to give them something stronger that works and makes them feel good. And so it goes on. So as a result, the doctors end up in a position where they're under a lot of pressure from patients to take their symptoms away. And they have this influence from the pharmaceutical industry for all these new drugs that are being marketed in terms of opiate-based drugs. They're getting stronger, more sophisticated, and there are even some claims that some of them are not addictive. But I can tell you now, without a shadow of doubt, every single opiate is potentially addictive, no matter what anyone says, because they all attach to the same receptors and they all do the same thing. So as a result of this sort of a two-way interaction between patient and doctor, it perpetuates the whole opiate prescription. And remember, South Africa is one of the few countries in the world where you can still get opiates without a prescription. You can go to a pharmacy and buy a box of codeine-containing painkillers or a bottle of cough mixture with codeine, which, by the way, the teenagers are now using something called Lean. And you can walk out and come back 10 minutes later and buy another one.
Which is exactly what I used to do. That was exactly what I used to literally go pharmacy to pharmacy with a story about having a bad back and be handed, you know, codeine like it was going out of style. It's so interesting that you say that about doctors not realising that certain medications contain opioids. But not only that, but the misunderstanding of addiction. I've lost count of the number of times I've gone in to see a doctor as a recovering addict and have said, but I can't take, and I've given them, you know, essentially anything with codeine in, and they've gone, oh, but you only need to take it for X long. And I go, yeah, but I'm an addict. I can't ever take that stuff. It's not okay, you know, it's one is too many, a thousand's never enough. I don't have the luxury of being able to say, yes, but I'll just take it for a week. It's after 15 years clean, it's not a risk I'm prepared to take. And it's happened so many times when I've been to the dentist, when I've been to the doctor, that there just seems to be this disconnect about what we're talking about. And I'll tell you now, it will take me to the very brink of life if I ever pick up at something like this again. So I absolutely hear what you're saying. There are other, you mentioned cough mixtures there. Can we talk about some of the other over-the-counter drugs or even, you know, that are prescribed by our doctors that we might not necessarily realise are a problem? I remember being prescribed Zopiclone once, and that I was like, I can't take this. I could, from the first pill that I took, I knew it was going to be a problem for me.
Sure. Can I just say one thing before answer that question? You know, we say all these things about painkillers and opiates and so on being problematic. They definitely do have a role.
For sure.
They have a role post-operatively. Sure. Patients have been to theater. They have a role in severe pain, but not longer than a week, not longer than 2 weeks.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. You know, it should not be prescribed for more than a week or two. I see patients in my pain clinic that have been on painkillers on prescription where it says take 2 tablets 3 times a day, repeat time 6 months. And they've been on that for years.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, it's a very, very effective compound that's very good for people that need it. But on the other hand, without the right knowledge, it can be extremely dangerous. And that's really the issue.
Thanks for saying
that. So things like Zopiclone and benzodiazepines are what they call benzoid drugs. So those are not opiates per se. But if you take them in large amounts and for long enough periods, they will also activate your addiction center through dopamine. So that's the commonality between the opiates and the benzoids. So benzoids are the Zopiclone, the Zolpidems, the drugs like Valium and Rohypnol and Xanax and Alprazolam and so on, which are also hugely abused and hugely misprescribed and dispensed. So it's another huge problem in terms of prescription drugs. So those are the two classes of drugs.
Right, the benzoids and the opioids.
Which are problems.
Yeah.
The opioids and the benzoids.
Yeah, Yeah. If you're just joining us this morning, we're speaking to pain management expert Dr. Shakir Solduka, who is also a member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists. We're talking about painkiller addiction specifically, although we have just heard there that there are other addictive over-the-counter medicines or medicines that can be prescribed that come under benzodiazepines. So that would be, as Shakir just said, things that perhaps are prescribed for anxiety or insomnia, your Zopiclones, your Valium, things like that, which can be a problem. I've lost track of the number of people in support meetings that I've attended who you would look at them and say, well, they're not a drug addict. And then they will tell you their history with Xanax. They'll tell you their history with cough mixture, even. It's quite extraordinary. Morning, SJ. Please ask the doctor, what about taking painkillers for phantom pains? As I'm an amputee and right leg, the pain is unbearable, says Kenny. I suppose that goes back to what you were saying just a second ago, Shakir, about we're not to demonise all of these drugs. They have a purpose, and the purpose is to remove pain. But what would one do, somebody like Kenny, who's going to experience what the pain that he's experiencing for longer than 2 weeks?
So phantom pain is a specific pain which is linked to nerve damage, and there is no role for opiates in phantom pain. But opiates are largely prescribed in phantom pain because, again, of the lack of knowledge. So if you think about how phantom pain works, it's the nerve has been severed because of the amputation, but the brain still perceives, because it still has representation in the brain, it still perceives that there is an arm or a leg or a foot present. And they feel pain, although that doesn't exist, but that's all in the brain. This is the pain that exists in the brain.
Got it.
So the drugs that work for phantom pain are things like pregabalin, known as Lyrica or the other generics of it. And there are other drugs which you can use for things like neuropathic type pains, which phantom pain roughly falls under. But there is no role for long-term opiates in phantom pain. They actually do nothing.
Sure.
All they do is numb the sensation for a while, and then your body develops tolerance to it, and then they stop working. So, because it's a chronic pain, it's a long-term pain that you're going to probably need treatment for years for, you need to look at things like pregabalin, and there's a drug called duloxetine, which works together with pregabalin for phantom pain.
Kenny, I hope that helps you. We need to wrap up, Shakir, but I just want to ask you, listen, what if somebody's listening in now, perhaps they've been on a prescription for a painkiller for a long time, maybe they're worried about a friend or a family member, what would be some of the signs of an addiction, a prescription drug addiction? What should we be looking out for, either in ourselves or in somebody else?
So outwardly, people who take prescription drugs on a daily basis develop what is called tolerance.
Yeah.
So as a result, their body becomes immune to the effect. So they need more and more to get the same effect. So they take larger numbers of tablets more frequently in the day. So you'll often find people, having to buy tablets quite often. So that's one warning sign. The other one is if you find a person who has like significant mood swings, they're happy and doing well for a part of the day, then they're quite grumpy and irritable, then they feel happy again, and then they're irritable again. Usually it's because the drug is wearing off until they take their next dose.
Mm-hmm.
So mood swings is another one. Gastrointestinal symptoms like chronic constipation and so on are a direct result of codeine. If people are taking things in anticipation, they say, I'm going to take this because I know I'm going to get a headache today.
Yeah.
That's another sign that they're probably becoming dependent on it. If they're taking it every night because they say it helps them to sleep, they're usually dependent on it. If you find people, when it grows, remember the more tablets you take, the closer you get to a dose of heroin. So when you find people starting to have problems with motor coordination, or they're struggling at work, or their cognitive function declines in terms of concentration, memory, clarity of thinking, and so on, and they start to drop the ball or, make mistakes, that's also a warning sign. Slurring of speech, just changes that are intermittent throughout the day would signify some kind of alteration in the person's mental state.
That's very helpful information, Shakir. We appreciate your time this morning. Really informative, and hopefully you've taken something out from that conversation. I certainly have. Pleasure to have you with us, pain management expert Dr. Shakir Solduka, talking to us this morning about painkiller addiction. Very often, and he was saying there that very often it's these are medications that, of course, they serve a purpose. They wouldn't exist if they didn't. They have a very legitimate medical... there's a legitimate medical reason for using them. However, it's very often that they're being prescribed by doctors who either aren't aware, which seems extraordinary, doesn't it? Who either aren't aware that what they're prescribing is an opioid, or isn't taking seriously the connection between certain painkillers and the addictive nature that they have. I do just want to point out that there is support out there if you are concerned for a loved one. You can go to SADAC for more information, NA meetings, na.org.za. There is support out there for yourself or a loved one. You're listening to Weekend Breakfast.